Hey, this is Billy West. Sometimes I play Philip Jake Fry. Man, all this constant exposure to radiation is making me thirsty.
And Dr. Zoidberg, are you going to eat that?
And Zap Brannigan. Kiff, alert the men. I've made it with a woman.
Good news, everyone.
Bad news. By the way, I'm Billy West, if you forgot already. And you're listening to Weeby Geeks Podcast. You're home for this sort of thing.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Summoning batteries to power.
Mission commencing.
My name is Optimus Prime.
All wings, check in.
Red 3, standing by.
Red 6, standing by.
Red 5, standing by.
Red Button, standing by.
Red Fox, standing by.
Big Red, standing by.
Red October, standing by.
Helen Reddy, standing by.
Simply Red, standing by.
Great Scott!
So, the bad crowd you've been hanging out with is a science fiction club?
Back at the above-ground, underwater, suborbital volcano lair.
It's another edition of Weeby Geeks. I'm your host, Mike. On the other side of the table is Eric, and joining us, one of the co-hosts of Horde of Notions, Adina Chernosky. Welcome, everyone.
Hey, hello. Mike. How's it going?
Good. So, thought I'd do a special treat with having Adina on, besides her being a youth group classmate of mine. She is a level 2 judge with magic and a player herself, so we figured get some insight into the world of magic.
All right, sure. What would you like to know? First of all, how much do you already know? And then we can go from there.
Me personally?
Kai Bud follows me on Twitter.
Ooh, that's impressive. Kai Bud, his name's actually Kai Buddha, but, he was on our podcast.
Okay. I asked him to come on this podcast and he was like, I don't think I'd be very interesting.
Well, he was on our podcast, so no, just
kidding. I'm jealous.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah, we had interviewed him. We've actually had a lot of different magic pros have been on our cast, so. And Kai is definitely one of those people that is it's disputed whether or not he is the best magic player in the world, or whether John Finkel holds that title, but, they're neck and neck right up there and they're both fabulous. They've both been on our cast. So we're very blessed that we've had them and Patrick Chapin and all sorts of, really, really big names up there. So.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about Horde of Notions.
Horde of Notions is a podcast about deck building. We kind of focus in between FNM and, your larger tournament. So we're not just a tournament report. This is the best deck. This is what you should be playing kind of cast. We are, okay, this is what won the GP last week. So you're going to see it at FNM. Here's what we can build to play against it. Or, hey, this is some fun, card that we like, and we're going to build some sort of a combo deck around it, and we might be brewing right on the cast and trying to figure out, what to build around it, how to make our deck. So it's that's kind of the focus of the cast. And then, of course, from time to time, we have various magic celebrities come onto the cast and we ask them, what's your process? How do you build decks? What are some stories from some of your, tournaments or some of your favorite decks? Obviously we want to focus on deck building, but, when we have somebody on the cast that either, if they've just published a book or if they've done something, pretty significant or they've just won a tournament, we kind of want to get them to talk about that as well, because that's what everybody wants to hear from that particular person.
All right. Now, before the show, you became a judge in June. What's the process of becoming a judge?
Sure. I became a level 2 judge in June. I had actually the previous, I had been a level 1 judge since, March of, the previous year, March 31st. I got my, my level 1. And the process is, if you are interested in judging and you, the best thing to do is whatever your local game store is, just go up and let them know that you're interested and talk to whoever is the judge or the tournament organizer. And say, hey, this is something that I would like to do. one of the first things that you can do, Wizards has this whole little judge center, and you can log into that if you have a competitive number, if you have a DCI number, which is your competitive number that you get at any, if you're ever at any tournament and you play in it, you'll get this number. So you use this number to register, and then you can take what's called a rules advisor exam. Now, the rules advisor is not required in order to qualify for being a judge. However, what it does is, on that website, it will unlock all of the other practice tests so that you'll be able to take the level one practice test and kind of see where you are. The rules advisor will also give you a good idea whether or not you know the rules or whether you need to go back and study the rules. But once you kind of have a handle on how everything works, and, you know, a lot of times people start out being a judge at their store simply because they're the ones that everybody is always asking if they don't know how something works. Say, hey, how does this card work? Hey, I just played this. What does it do? Hey, can he do that? Cause he seems to think that if he sacrifices that, then I won't deal any damage to it and I won't gain the life from the lifelink. Is that how it works? So the people that are answering those questions are usually, you know, the people that are interested in becoming judges. So you would take this practice test, you know, you pass it, you become a rules advisor. Now you're allowed, I mean, you're allowed to judge a tournament anyway without anything, as long as it's a casual tournament. But if you want to go away to like a GP or a Star City Games tournament or any of these big premier tournaments that they've been having, and I mean, with Magic growing the way that it has been, you know, the competitive scene, you know, there are tournaments with, you know, a couple thousand people. So more and more, we need more judges and we have more players and there's so many more interactions and things going on that, it's a really great program to get involved with if you are interested in the rules and you feel like you understand the game. And also if you like being at tournaments and meeting people and working with people and, you know, it's just a great atmosphere. So that's the process to being able to take the practice tests. Then for level one, there's an exam that you have to pass. For level two, you have to have judged, you know, there's also a judging requirement. For level one, you have to judge two tournaments. Any two tournaments, you know, you're not certified, you're just judging with somebody else. In order to test for level two, you have to head judge a tournament where you have someone else that's helping you out. And you also have to judge at least one competitive tournament. There are different rules enforcement levels. There is casual, which would be your Friday Night Magics and your basic tournaments at your store. And then the more competitive things with the bigger prizes, they're going to be run at this competitive REL. And then there's also a professional rules enforcement level. So you have to judge at least one competitive tournament. And at competitive tournaments, there's a whole other thing as far as penalties, infractions, warnings, things that can happen to you, which doesn't happen at your regular. At your regular tournament, the penalties are basically either, no, it doesn't work that way, don't do that, or you're disqualified, get out of here, we don't want you punching other players, or, you know, some sort of terrible behavior. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do to get thrown out of a tournament, but the things that will get you thrown out are pretty obvious when you do them. You know, any kind of, yeah.
So a tombstone.
Violent behavior.
Or a back suplex through a table.
It's always fun to read. It's always fun to read the DCI, suspension list. Because on occasion there's someone who's like banned for life because they punched a judge or something.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to go around punching the people who have organized the tournaments, punching the people who are working to keep the tournament running for you, punching other players. Like any kind of punching is probably out. You know, any kind of destruction of property is probably going to get you thrown out of the tournament. Any kind of bribery, you know, hey, if you concede to me, I'll give you this, you know, $20. Yeah, that's going to get you disqualified from the tournament and thrown out as well. So, you know, so some pretty obvious bad behaviors. One of the lesser obvious things that can get you disqualified is randomly determining the winner of the game, because that compromises the integrity of the tournament. So, you know, if you get to the end of the game and nobody's won and time's running out, you're not allowed to flip a coin and say, oh, hey, let's just flip for it. No, it doesn't work that way. You're allowed to concede to your opponent. They're allowed to concede to you. You know, if you want to each look at the top three cards of your library and see whether or not you would have won in the next couple of turns, Yeah, that's iffy, but that's still using the game to determine, you know, who's going to concede to who. Now, flipping over the top card and saying whoever has the highest mana cost card on top of their library, that's random, and that's going to get you disqualified. But, you know, don't roll
also,
a die.
Very unfair to white weenie decks.
That is true, yeah. There are definitely some decks out there that aren't going to have anything with a high mana cost. So, you know.
Like, maybe a Wrath of God, but other than that.
Yeah. It's funny because after, you know, playing and judging and everything, I'm now actually organizing tournaments right here in town. And there's a very small play group of, mostly, you know, middle school, high school kids that, that have been playing at the library. And so I've started working with them and we've started having tournaments every week. And one of the things that I had to kind of wean them off of doing in the very, very beginning was, at the beginning of the game, normally you would roll a die to figure out, you know, who's going to go first. And they would just pick up their library, reveal the bottom card of their library, and whoever, you know, see who has the highest mana cost. And I'm just like, okay, first of all, you know, you're not supposed to know any of the cards in your library. So if you flip it over and then, you know, yeah, okay, you know, you're not going to draw that card for the whole game now. So yeah, that's kind of a strategic either advantage or disadvantage. I mean, it's obviously an advantage. It's an even advantage because both players know both cards, but
yeah,
still not really something that you want in a tournament. And then the other thing which people tend to do, which is not, you know, one of those behaviors we want to discourage, is if you have a card and it leaves the battlefield or or it's a sorcery or something and you play it and it makes a token, like, some people just flip the card over and use that as the token instead of putting the card in your graveyard.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of cards that care how many cards are in your graveyard or return things from your graveyard or shuffle your graveyard back into your library. You know, various reasons why we don't want to have cards that should be in your graveyard on the board representing something else.
They still have to be in order in Vintage, right, in the graveyard?
There are some cards in Vintage and Legacy, you do have to keep them in order because there are cards that care about graveyard
yeah.
order. But they have definitely,
modern
they don't print
standard
anything.
Doesn't matter anymore.
Correct. So for those of your listeners, I don't know how familiar your listeners are with Magic. Standard is everything from the last 2 years. Modern is everything from about 8 or 9 years ago. From that set forward and nothing will ever rotate out. It's just from there forward. On into the future, everything's legal and modern. And then Legacy is everything that's ever been printed except for some specific super powerful cards that are banned. And then in Vintage, those cards that are banned are allowed, although most of them are restricted and you can only have one copy of them. But they did create, they have the Vintage format so that the people that have these super expensive, super powerful cards actually have a format in which they can play them.
Do you think, that the reserve list is hurting the viability of Legacy?
I know it's making it difficult for newer players
I mean, specifically
to enter
the dual lands.
Specifically the dual lands, yes. And that's really everything else that's on there is not affecting it because it's either banned or not commonly used or, it's not the staples. But the dual lands are staples that you almost, yes, there are substitute cards that you can use, but they're so much less powerful that if you're going to play a deck in Legacy, you need to be able to get your hands on those lands. Which is one of the reasons why the modern format was introduced because conveniently, any card that has been printed in Modern is absolutely not on the reserve list.
Yeah.
So anything that they want to reprint, they always will be able to. The policy was created before anybody who works there now worked there. It was created before Hasbro, you know, owned the company. There's so many things about this policy that, you know, it's this obsolete policy and nobody was around. But at the same time, it was created, they promised we will never print these cards again. And if they go back on that promise, you know, then that compromises the integrity of the entire game, unfortunately. And there are some people that say, oh no, it really wouldn't. And then there are collectors who have these super expensive cards who say, oh yes, it would. And I would be furious because now, you know, this $1,000 card that I have, oh, they just reprinted it and now it's worth a quarter. You know, granted, it doesn't quite work that way. And we've found that some of the cards that they reprinted, that didn't reduce their value. It actually increased their value because now they're legal again. I'm thinking more of Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, that was going to be the second one, because in Modern Masters, after
yeah,
they reprinted it in Modern Masters,
the
price went up.
It did, yeah. Because more and more people, now that Modern Masters is printed, now people have access to a lot more of the staples. And so something like Modern Masters, unfortunately, they cannot do with regular, you know, with, they can't just do a Masters edition. They do that online, and that's how they got the dual lands online. And so online, the dual lands are not nearly as expensive as they are in real life, because technically, if it's online, it's not out of print. Even though they might not actually be printing it or selling it anymore, they could at any point reprint it because it's electronic. So all they have to do is create more.
The Force of Will is the big money card online.
Definitely, yeah, because that came out in Masters Edition, the first one, and then they haven't reprinted it.
Yeah.
And it's not like they don't have a reserved list online, so anything they want to print online, they can print online.
Yeah, they're printing the P9, what, early next year?
I hadn't heard that yet.
I just read the announcement. It's. Look, I think they're calling this set Vintage Masters.
Wow.
And every pack is going to have not one of the P9, but like I think either a foil rare or one of the Power 9 cards.
Wow. That'll be a nice way to appease all the people that are upset about all the crashes and everything that's going on with the mocks right now. My championship series.
Are the dailies still offline? I've been playing Hearthstone a lot.
Yeah, they basically shut everything down. I mean, I haven't played Magic Online since I started judging. It's kind of funny because one of the reasons why I know the rules so well is because I originally only played online. Being in Wyoming, I'm fairly isolated. There aren't a lot of people around me that play Magic. And when I first started playing, I really didn't know anyone except my roommate that played Magic. So we played online because that was the only way to find other people to play against. And I built this collection online. And then around Alara Block, there was a pre-release, and I thought, hey, what the heck? I think I'll drive over to Idaho Falls because, yeah, the nearest local game store is an hour and a half away and in another state. And so I drove over there, went to this tournament. I was like, wow, this is so fun to play with, like, actual cards. And ever since then, I've kind of been playing. So I'm backwards. Like, a lot of people played with the real cards and then started to get into online, and I did it the other way around. But the thing about online is it's like having a level 5 judge over your shoulder the entire game because you can't make a play error because the computer just won't let you do it. Like, if that's not a legal target, it won't let you click on it. So, you know, there's a lot of things about the game that I just knew how they worked once I started playing. And people were like, oh, wow, you, like, get the stack and you get responding to things and priority and, like, all of that was very simple to me because, you know, you have to click okay if you want to yield priority. So I know what that is.
You know?
Yeah, it's – Magic is very foreign to me for the most part, so I'm enjoying hearing you guys talk about it.
Yeah, I started playing with – revised.
Wow.
I forget when that came out. I think it was around 96.
Mm-hmm. I was actually playing this game called Overpower because I was in college back then.
Well, in
96, I'd already graduated, but in like 93, I was in college and this game Overpower with superheroes and it was so cool. And I was making, you know, this chick deck that had like all the female, you know, they were all like the red haired suit, you know, cat suited, you know, heroes.
Overpower was Marvel, right?
Originally it was just Marvel and then they added in all the DC characters.
Okay.
And then it just kind of went away. And around that time, someone tried to teach me to play Magic, and I thought, this looks really fun, but I'm already collecting this other card game, and I'm a fiend. I am a fiend about collecting cards, and I'm like constantly looking for them, and I know if I got involved with this other game, I would be collecting those cards too, and I can't afford to do it, and I don't have space for that, you know, like, one card game is all I can handle. So I stuck with Overpower like an idiot. Obviously now, you know, if I could go back and, you know, tell my 23-year-old self, you're being an idiot. You don't do that. You know, then that would be fabulous. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. At least not yet. Someday I can go back and I'll have all those Black Lotuses, you know, from playing back in Alpha. And, yeah, I will learn how to play that and I'll take all those overpower cards and burn them. And actually, I guess I could still do that because I still have them. They are in a drawer actually with some magic cards in a separate binder, in a separate box. They're not, you know, mixed in together or anything like that.
I think my first exposure to magic is when, they actually held a magic tournament here at Disney at Wide World Sports Complex many years ago, like right after turn of the century.
Okay.
And, but I was more, okay, there's equipment issues. All right. I'll go down, take care of changing out whatever speaker and go back.
Like, oh, well, they have this podium and they have a microphone and it's not working and they need to announce that the round is starting. So, okay.
Yep.
the joy of being an audio engineer.
Well, at the time, I wasn't assigned to a specific show. It was Sports Complex is one of those venues where we set up many PA systems for soccer fields, for the football fields, spring training for like the Braves or the Atlanta Braves, or when we had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers here, setting up different PA stuff. I mean, it was fun for a little bit, but you know, once I got back to actually mixing bands, it's like, and prove myself there, it's like, yeah, I don't think I'm going back over sports.
Like, yeah, I really like this. It's so much more challenging and more interesting than, you know, just making sure the speaker works.
Very much so.
Like, is it plugged in? No? Okay, here you go. You're done.
Why isn't it working?
I know there's a little more to it, but like 90% of the time when people call you with tech questions, isn't it just that something is like, it's plugged into the wrong place, or it's not, or it came unplugged, or, you know, the cable is frayed and it's not working, you just need to replace the cable, or...
Have you guys ever seen The IT Crowd? It's a British sitcom about two guys who work in the IT department.
Wow, no, but I bet it's hilarious.
It's amazing. the one character, he's Irish, his catchphrase in the first series, and they sort of got away from it because it became a catchphrase, but he would just answer the phone and go, "Hello, hi, T, have you tried turning it off and back on again?"
Yeah. The standard fix for any computer issue.
Yep.
I once read a comparison that, you know, if automobiles were like computers, then, you know, every 2 miles you'd have to turn them off and they'd stall out and you'd have to turn them back on again. They had all these different things, but at the end it was like, but they'd get 46,257 miles to the gallon. Like, they'd be super efficient, but then all these other little crash issues, you know, it's like the brakes would only work part of the time and, you know, the headlights would only work when it was raining. And
you turn it off by pressing the start button.
You have to hold down the, you know, you have to turn on the radio and hold down the air conditioner button to get the headlights to come on. You know.
So, Adina says she was able to join us for the rest of the show. So, you guys heard about Bat Kid in San Francisco?
Oh, the Bat Kid was amazing.
That
warmed my heart.
Haven't heard about that yet. So what happened?
Bat Kid, it was a kid who was in the Make-A-Wish program, because of the cancer he has, even though he's in remission.
Lymphoblastomic, leukemia.
Yes.
Okay.
Even though he's in remission, you know, he still has it. He's not cleared yet. His wish was to be Batman and help save Gotham.
Okay.
So they made him Bat Kid, teamed him up with a Batman, local exotic car dealership donated Lamborghinis as the Batmobile.
Wow.
First thing he had to do was go rescue this woman off the trolley tracks. Which, when you look at the pictures.
The Riddler, right?
Yeah, I was involved with the Riddler. When you look at the picture, it's like, you know, she could have just rolled off the track. But, I mean, It was cool.
I'm sure
got him
for
involved.
Safety reasons, she couldn't really be like strapped to the tracks with a train coming, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
have a little 5-year-old kid in chemo trying to untie the ropes.
I think this is a double hitch knot. Wait, I don't know how to do this.
So he saves her, goes to a bank, ends up capturing Riddler as he's trying to rob the bank. The San Francisco Giants mascot gets kidnapped, after they have lunch, and he goes rescue the mascot and captures the Penguin, ends up with a key to the city. The San Francisco paper did a, special front page as the Gotham Gazette or whatever it was, with him.
Yep. It was the mayor of San Francisco who was calling him. He's like, "Bat Kid, we need you."
That's so awesome.
And then he got a thank you from President Obama for saving the day.
Excellent. Even Obama sent a tweet going, "Go get him, Bat Kid." Yeah.
Nice.
Helping egg him on. Like, okay.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a big feel good story. I remember this happened once before, similar story, but they didn't go as deep with it as they did here. I want to say it was in the Dallas area that they did something similar about a year or two ago. But this definitely, I mean, they had the support with the police department, but they only did like one location here, you know, to make it the whole day. Was absolutely amazing. And,
yeah, I was like kind of hoping that he was going to go rogue and like dangle someone off a building like Michael Keaton.
Yeah. You know, it's actually convenient that he wanted to be Batman and not Superman because, you know, Batman has all these gadgets and a lot of things that physically we can do. Making him fly and giving him X-ray vision might not have been such, that might have been a little bit more challenging.
Yeah.
True.
I'm just like trying to like picture the logistics of how to do that. Like, all right, we'll give him these glasses that have this button he can push and it'll shoot these little, you know, red, you know, laser beams. And then, you know, we'll have something that he can melt with that. You know, he can't melt it. They don't actually melt it, but it's something that'll melt and they'll push a button and he'll turn on his glasses. And,
you would definitely have to figure out how to get the welder behind the steel. And then as soon as the hole creates, the welder disappears.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, look what you did. Yeah, but
can
you imagine the kid?
Some sort of like a harness so they can like fly him across, you know, from building to building or something.
Can you imagine the kid that wants to be Green Lantern or the Flash?
I don't know that there are a lot of kids.
What would be the most difficult superhero for a kid to decide to be?
Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Luckily, that's never going to come up.
Well,
no one's favorite superhero is Aquaman.
Scuba gear has been around for a while. You know, that's not something that's technologically completely impossible. Now, you know, the Invisible Man, I don't know how they do that.
Yeah. Magneto would probably be difficult, too.
Yeah.
Unless you want to strap a giant electromagnet to a cancer patient. Just probably not a great idea.
Doesn't seem like, you know, that's an optimal situation for fulfilling a wish.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So,
yeah
it was an interesting thing that they did out there. And for it to capture the internet in the way that it did was a very positive thing. And I really, really like how it played out.
Yeah, it was really, really cool.
So,
just, you know, like it was almost universally positive reaction to it.
Yes, very much so.
There were a few people who were like, "Oh, well, the kid's in remission. Why does he get, you know, the Make-A-Wish thing?" And I don't know if you're familiar with what cancer treatment is like.
Not pleasant.
It's not pleasant at all.
And just because the kid's in remission, just, you know, he still has it.
Well, he still had to go through all that.
I mean,
he's just a little kid and he had to go through all that. You know, he deserves a wish. It doesn't have to be a dying wish. He just deserves to get a wish for, you know, everything that he went through.
President or the chairman of the Make-A-Wish Foundation said, his exact quote was, "We're not going to punish someone for getting better."
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's still hell that they go through.
Yes.
So,
luckily that was a very small minority who were basically told immediately.
I would hope so, yeah.
Yeah, so kudos to San Francisco and the mayor and the police department out there in helping make that wish come true. So, go from feel good to maybe a little creepy.
I know what this is.
Brian Wood.
Have you heard the Brian Wood story?
I am reading the article that you posted in the show notes as we speak. And yes, it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, Brian Wood basically, and Tess Fowler is a comic book artist, and she did this story about how essentially this guy told her, "Hey, you know, come up to my hotel room and I'll help you get into comic books," essentially. And she didn't name any names, but like after the article was published, she got multiple emails from women being like, "Is it Brian Wood? Because that's what he said to me."
Wow.
So she came forward and said, "Yeah, it was Brian Wood." And what amazes me about this was that it was like around 2007 at San Diego Comic-Con. He was not a major figure back then. He had done, you know, DMZ and Northlanders at the time, I believe. But this is a guy who, you know, first of all, at the time he's married and his wife is pregnant with his first kid, and I believe his wife was there with him at the convention. But he's also not, you know, today he's one of the biggest names in comic books. At the time, he was a minor figure, right, who's using, you know, whatever small amount of celebrity he has to try to get laid.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the sad part of this is that just doesn't sound that unbelievable to me. Like, people do this kind of thing all the time. And, you know, obviously he's a little bit more well known. And if he says, "Oh, I can, you know, I write for this comic and I can get your work in it," you know, that may have a little bit more clout. But I mean, people have been exaggerating what they can and can't do in order for sexual favors for a long time, you know. This is not like a, "Oh my gosh, wow, I can't believe, you know, somebody just thought to do this." It's, you know, unfortunate in our society that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and for something and that happened 8 years ago, why? Well, for something that happened 8 years ago.
Well, it's Wood, the fact that
why,
so many
why is she
other...
bringing up now? Because he is a more predominant figure?
Well, first of all, she didn't mention his name at first. It was because he had done it to so many other people. It was not an isolated incident. This is, you know, something that he's sort of known to do.
Right.
Despite the fact that, you know, and no one said it's not still going on. You know, we haven't heard from all these other women who don't want to, you know, obviously become a public face of this. They don't want to face the sort of harassment that Tess Fowler has had to face since she came forward with it.
Yeah, it sounds like she had just, you know, told the story and said, "You know, 8 years ago, here's something that happened. Somebody actually tried to get me to sleep with him by saying this." You know, and then people were like, "Oh, really? Because guess what? I know who you're talking about because they've tried it with like all these other people." And then you're like, "Oh, huh." And you kind of, it's kind of one of those things that when something creepy like that happens to you, you have to wonder, you know, if it didn't work with you, how many other people are they going to try it on? And is somebody going to fall? It's like when you get those emails that say, you know, "You've won this lottery that you never actually entered. Send us your bank account information and your social security number so we can put the money in your account." Like, okay, I'm thinking, why would I do this? But clearly those emails are still going around. Somebody must read that and think, "Oh, I should do this. I need to give them my bank account number. You know, it obviously worked on someone. And so, you know, for a situation like this, it's the same thing. They're just going to be like, well, if it didn't work on her, I'm just going to go try this other, you know, female. And there's somebody gullible out there, whether it's a female, whether it's for sex, whether it's, you know, to try and get your bank account information, you know, there's always going to be a gullible person out there that'll fall for whatever scheme or scam you're trying to run. And, you know, scammers will be scammers.
Very true. Very true. So it's the adage, what happens at a con stays at a con. Not so much anymore.
Not unless the con's in Vegas. there's nothing about, you know, what happens in San Diego stays in San Diego. I've never heard that.
Yeah.
The adage.
Well, Las Vegas changed their motto to, you know, come and cheat on your wife.
I saw that motto. I seem to have missed that.
That's basically what their motto already is. It's just, you know, implicit instead of explicit.
It's almost.
Or come here single, go home with a wife. You may not remember who she is, but hey.
Like that episode of The Simpsons.
Or like all the movies that they've written, you know, or somebody goes to Vegas and comes home married.
Yeah.
But it's almost like the new way to change it, what happens at a con or at Vegas ends up on YouTube.
That's actually more likely to happen right there.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a difference between going to a convention or Las Vegas or whatever and, you know, hooking up with someone and, you know, using your position of authority, whatever it may be, in an industry to try to get sexual favors in exchange for professional consideration.
I'm sorry, have you not heard of Hollywood?
Well, yeah, exactly.
couch is the oldest story, you know, that's been around for years.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that it's not okay is the point.
Yeah, but back in the day, there were no such things as sexual harassment lawsuits.
Yeah.
But, you know, nowadays, yeah, there's a lot that can come out of that. And, it's the same thing as being at work. If you're in a position of authority, you know, any kind of sexual advances toward a coworker or a subordinate or anything like that, you know, if they say no, you know, it's one thing to say, would you like to go out with me? No, thank you. Okay. End of story. Yeah. But, you know, to grab their body part every time they walk by you, that's, you know, not acceptable. And, you know, there's seminars, like almost any company, any big company that you work for, the first week that you're there, you have to sit through a sexual harassment seminar. You know, that's everywhere.
Sexual harassment,
diversity. I will
give you a raise
if you come to work tomorrow. Without your top on.
Right. Yeah. Don't put up a poster of a naked person in your cubicle. You know, all these various different things, you know, that are offensive and not acceptable behavior in public.
If you decide to watch a movie in the break room, it must be rated G. Of course, we're like, are you serious?
Well, unless you're working in the porn industry, because, you know, you're probably, you know, that's part of your work is watching porn.
Yeah. Well, you've got to keep up on the new porn technology.
Well, I mean, you've got to edit what you just taped, so.
Yeah.
I was thinking of it that way, but, you know.
So.
I was thinking there might be some, like, new breakthrough that you have to, like. You know, people are discovering new sex positions all the time, apparently.
Yeah, apparently they the Kama Sutra is still a foreign thing to set, like, people haven't heard of it. And they're like, oh, look at this new position. Have you read the Kama Sutra? Because it's in there.
It is a great way to throw your back out.
Yeah, not everyone is physically capable of making all of these different shapes with their body.
When the modern version tells you this is for those of the gymnastic nature.
Right.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't try it. Batman versus Superman. The producer revealed some interesting details this past week.
Such as?
One producer took to Twitter to drop some plot details concerning the status of the Cape Crusader. He's semi-retired, not speaking to Robin anymore, controlling drones from the Batcave.
Hmm. So supposedly this takes place before, like, the Super Friends? Or is this, like, afterwards? Did Batman try to steal Superman's girlfriend or something? Did he hook up with Lois Lane behind his back? Like, why are they fighting? They're supposed to be working together.
It's because Frank Miller...
Don't they both run the Justice League together? I'm so confused.
Yeah, it's because Frank Miller had this hard-on for writing books where Batman beats Superman in, like, fist fights and whatnot. And everyone loved Frank Miller's books. But, like, every Batman book Frank Miller writes, eventually, at some point, Batman fights Superman and wins. Because that's what he loves to do.
Okay. Because that's plausible. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Snyder has come out and said that, you know, he's taking his Batman versus Superman loosely from the Dark Knight Returns story, yet it was also kind of teased that it's coming more from Kingdom Come storyline as well.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, unless he's wearing a kryptonite glove, you know, he's punching the Man of Steel. Like, that's got to hurt.
Yeah. In the Dark Knight Returns, he had some sort of exo suit or something.
Okay. So a gadget that helped him. Yeah. That's plausible at least.
That was before Frank Miller went crazy. I'm just so worried that this movie is going to turn it with the drones thing. Like, it's going to be some kind of pro-authoritarian right-wing thing like, The Dark Knight Rises was, or like, Watchmen turned out to be on film, which is so different from what Watchmen was in the comic.
Well, when these drones fly over some small rural town in Colorado, don't be surprised if they get shot down, since it's illegal there.
Yeah, Colorado, that's a little too close to home here.
Yeah.
Don't be flying drones over Colorado, please, because, you know. Actually, the drones that are flying over Colorado probably won't get shot down until they get to Wyoming, because there's a lot more guns here. You know, Colorado, they're kind of, you know, busy smoking weed, and they're, you know.
Yeah, but is it legal to shoot
They're not as gun crazy.
Is it legal to shoot down drones in Wyoming?
I'm just saying it's more likely that somebody's got, like, an anti-aircraft missile in Wyoming than Colorado.
Oh, well, they're
in Colorado, you can't have that. It has to be regular hunting rifles in order to shoot down the drone.
I don't know if you've seen the spy drones that they use. They're basically what I was going to say is they're basically RC flyers. They're like a high-tech version of the RC helicopter that you played with as a kid. They're very small, and they are low-flying.
Right.
They probably have an 8 to 10 foot wingspan.
Right.
Okay, there might be some areas of rural Colorado, you know, the ones that want to secede from the state. Those guys have all the guns and everything. But
yeah.
For the most part, you know, that's really Wyoming. Wyoming is where there's just, you know, everyone in town has a couple of guns laying around their house. And you don't flip somebody off driving down the street because they probably have a gun in the back of their truck. You know, you just know better. It's Wyoming, you know, like people go out and shoot buffalo and, you know, get licenses to go out and shoot, you know, very large animals. And, you know, hunting is huge here. So, yeah.
Well, it is here too.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Pennsylvania is a big
deal. The middle of Pennsylvania. I'm from in Pennsylvania, that's huge. We actually got one day off school for Doe Day and one day off school for Buck Day.
Yeah, I had off school the first day of Buck, too. They started giving us off the first day of Buck season because the one year that there was, like, no one was there.
Oh, yeah, no, that was the second day of Buck season. It was, like, the biggest teachers and students. highest absence day of the year, because everyone who didn't get their buck on the first day when we were off school had to go back out hunting. And so, yeah, there was nobody in school the first 2 days of buck season.
What really pissed me off was on the big skip days for us. There was senior skip day and there was Groundhog's Day, right?
Right.
So if you were absent on Groundhog's Day or skip day, you had to have a doctor's excuse. Or it counted as an uncounted absence. You couldn't, you know, use a regular parental excuse like you could any other day of the year. But when everyone skips for the first day of deer season, what they did instead of, you know, saying, well, you have to have a doctor's excuse, they just closed the schools. They just started closing the school the next year.
I don't know. I don't know very many parents who would have written an excuse to say, please excuse my child from school because today's senior skip day. My parents sure as heck wouldn't. Well, of course, my mom was a teacher, so I couldn't skip because she would have known I wasn't there because she was there. And if I wasn't in school, she'd be like, where were you today? You know, I never got away with anything in high school.
Oh, my parents totally would have. Oh, actually, a lot of the parents at my school would have.
You know, I don't recall that even being an issue. I don't recall them saying, oh, you know, if your parent writes you a note, you're not excused. Like, that was never something at our school. Like, if the parent said, we're going skiing, we're going on a ski vacation, I want to excuse my kid for a week. Guess what? They got excused for a week. They wanted to go to Florida in the middle of February. They got excused. You know, if a parent said, I want my kid out of school, by golly, back then the teachers were like, hey, cool, fewer people to worry about. Your kid wants to take your kid somewhere else and be a parent? Please do it. Go ahead. Have family time. You know, that was looked on as a good thing.
I think a lot of it changed though in like 92, 93, because that's when I remember hearing like my high school parking. You had to have a parking permit. There was security. It was a locked gate. You had to have ID badges. Like, really?
Full lockdown?
In 92?
When I was in high school, I started high school, I guess it was in 95 or 96, because I graduated in 99. But they did like sort of crack down on the skip days, except, you know, if you were deer hunting, then it was perfectly all right.
No skipping unless you're shooting something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess, you know, it's better than bringing the guns to the school.
Yeah.
This is true. Yeah. You know, it goes a long way to say that, you know, these places where they allow you to go out and hunt animals have, you know, fewer of those sorts of incidents. Although, you know, a crazy person is a crazy person no matter where they are. And, you know, there's always going to be someone troubled who, you know, gets their hands on a weapon, you know. I mean, when I was growing up, you used to hear about, you know, the postal employees doing this, you know. Nowadays, it's much more upsetting and, you know, younger people and all that. But, you know, there's always been violence. There's always been people willing to do horrible things to other human beings. I think that's why we need superheroes so much, you know, because they can actually save us from this. They can prevent that. And in real life, we just don't have that kind of control. We all need superpowers.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of superheroes, this is a topic I've been wanting to cover for a while. Difference between DC and Marvel on TV. Which has got the better thing going. Right now, DC's got Arrow. Marvel's got Shield. But DC is getting ready to make a jump with the Flash coming. Barry Allen makes an appearance, December 4th is the first episode he appears on Shield or on, Arrow.
Yeah.
Wow. Really crossing universes there. so he's still going to appear on the 4th and the week after, episodes 8 and 9.
Yeah. Which would be the 11th.
And then episode 20 was when he was supposed to appear in the costume. Well, now DC is announcing that they're going to do a standalone pilot for The Flash after these two episodes. So there'll be a pilot coming out a one-shot pilot for
as opposed to a backdoor pilot on Arrow.
Correct.
So
everyone's saying this is something that DC is making the right move, and Marvel won't do this type of thing with S.H.I.E.L.D. with anything coming up for them.
Well, I don't think you can make an apples to apples comparison, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is essentially a police procedural. It could be NCIS. It's meant to have the widest possible appeal. It's on a major network Tuesdays at 8 p.m. And Arrow,
it's Joss Whedon. Joss Whedon.
Well,
you know,
it's not Joss Whedon. It's Jed Whedon.
Joss
Whedon's an executive producer. Jed Whedon's
showrunner. I was going to say, I know that Joss Whedon is affiliated with the show.
Yeah, he wrote the pilot.
They made such a huge deal about it at the very beginning. So, you know, there's also that hand in it. And there's also the crossover with what's going on with the Avengers movies right now. You know,
And that's pretty much the main purpose of S.H.I.E.L.D. is to be a vehicle to help keep Avengers and the standalone films fresh and kind of give people that tease before the next film comes out.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at Arrow and the network that it's on the CW, it's essentially aimed at teenage girls.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about the cute ripped guy, you know, with all the muscles and everything, because you've got Arrow, and then you've got the Tomorrow People. And then if you look at the other nights on CW, you know, you've got the Vampire Diaries and the spin-off The Originals, you know, all this other stuff going on. Well, yeah, it's like comparing Rain to the White Queen. You know, if you saw that when it was on Stars, you know, you've got this major network. It's not the same, you know, because it's a major network.
But when you come to,
I mean, it's not the same comparing a major network like ABC to a network like CW that's more aimed, you know, at the younger crowd, mostly teenage girls, yes, but also to an extent teenage boys, because teenage boys want superpowers and they want to be the tough one that wins all. Because I mean, they definitely have a lot of pretty girls, you know, on all of the shows on the CW. That's one of the things. It's all these, you know, beautiful young actresses and beautiful young actors. It's all about the beautiful people.
Right. Well, outside of that, though,
not that I would say anyone on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would qualify as being ugly, because they're all these good looking people too. So, you know, they have bad looking villains, but they can do that, you know.
Well, they had Peter McNichol on. He's more of a character guy. And he was sort of he's sort of been, I think, the highlight of the series so far was Peter McNichol, which I don't know how well that bodes for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
Ally McBeal's boss is the high point.
to me, between the two, I mean, if you look at it, not as, in the fact that comic book show versus comic book show, Arrow definitely, I think, takes the higher ground.
What do you mean by higher ground?
That's what I was trying to get to. I
personally like Arrow better, but if you have like a specific more, you know, a better reason.
I just think Arrow's the better show, with the, you know, it bounces between present time, bounces between, you know, the time period that 5-year gap from when he was missing and filling in that gap back and forth.
It sounds like it has a more focused purpose.
Yes.
Than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is what that show has been lacking.
It definitely does. Yeah. There's not like an art, like a lot of times there's a story arc. Like in Arrow, the first season of Arrow, you have this story arc where, okay, he's got this book. He's trying to eliminate people. He's trying to figure out what's going on and what's this big bad thing that he's trying to prevent.
Yeah.
And within that, you know, it's just like a comic series. You know, you have each comic book has its own contained story, but they all work together to form a story arc that goes over the whole thing. And I feel like that's what's missing from S.H.I.E.L.D. Really, the only story arc is what happened in Tahiti, and it's like, I don't even care, like, whatever. I, you
yeah,
know,
that's
the, like,
they're handling that storyline poorly too, because they keep sort of, I mean, what do you know now after 8 episodes about what happened to Coulson that you didn't know?
He got a massage in Tahiti? Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
he keeps saying it's a magical place, like it's some sort of
code for
trained
something.
Response.
Yeah.
Whenever it comes up. But that's really the only thing that you know that you didn't know when the series started. I mean, you know, it's one thing to keep the mystery going, but
it feels like they haven't decided. It feels like the writers haven't decided yet what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
To pull a comparison from something else, which hopefully I'm not spoiling for everybody. Have you read the Divergent series at all? Or heard of it yet?
Who's it by? It sounds familiar, but it's not something that I've read. Is it a comic book?
No, it's a book. It's a trilogy. It's a young adult dystopian series. So like, if you've heard of The Hunger Games, it's been compared a lot to The Hunger Games. It's a futuristic world where, you know, the world has kind of collapsed and they're in this society where they have these 5 factions and each faction is dedicated to a different attribute. So for example, there's abnegation and they're devoted to selflessness. There's dauntless. They're devoted to bravery. And so, you know, anything that's not considered to be brave is, you know, against their faction. And so it's kind of separated society into these very specific, kind of values as far as what they want.
Sort of like the Mimbari on Babylon 5.
I'm not sure.
Okay. They had like a caste system, I guess, would be a better way to put it.
Yeah, it's similar to that. I mean, you get to choose. You get to pick when you turn 6, the whole point is when you turn 16, you get to pick a faction. And so that was what it was all about. It was all about, you know, picking a faction, and then she wrote a trilogy. Well, when she wrote that first book, she didn't know how the trilogy was going to end. She hadn't decided, okay, this is what, you know, this society is about. And this is where it's going, and this is how the whole series is going to conclude in the end, you know, and she didn't kind of have that vision that the things that she's foreshadowing to in the first book happen in the third book. Like, there were things that were foreshadowed that just never materialized. And there were other things that seemed like they were going to be a big deal, and then you get to the final book and it's like, meh, whatever, and we're doing this, you know? Yeah. And so it's this whole other story, and there was this huge, huge outrage with the third book. And if you've read the reviews for the third, and I didn't like the third book either. And if you've read the reviews for the third book, most of them are terrible, and people just hated it, not necessarily because there are some specific choices that, you know, could upset some of the people. However, that wasn't even what people are upset about. They're just upset because, like, they kind of took this story and said, you know, this is what's important and this is the world, and, oh yeah, whatever, we don't care, we're gonna go do this.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's where they're going with S.H.I.E.L.D. is that they don't know what happened in Tahiti. They don't know what the resolution of. They're just kind of like, well, we'll have this mysterious thing that we allude to, and then maybe we'll write an episode about it, you know, next season that explains what it is. And then when you get to that episode, you're like, none of the foreshadowing, like, led into this. Like, it wasn't well done.
Well, here's the thing about that, is that Jed Whedon has basically said that they do know.
Okay.
And the fact that that's not coming across that way, the fact that it comes across, like, they don't know what they're doing.
That means that they're not achieving. Yeah, they're not foreshadowing it well. Yeah, they're trying to keep it
poorly executed.
Well, maybe with the rumor that Chris Evans might be making an appearance on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Why the hell was Hemsworth not on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week?
I know, really.
How can you do a tie-in episode with the movie and make a big deal about how, you know, this directly follows the events of the movie and not have even Kat Dennings?
Do you know Thor? Oh, well, I know Thor. Maybe I'll introduce you guys someday.
what's the other guy's name? Skarsgård? Was that the guy who plays the scientist, the Eric, what's his name? I'm just totally blanking on it.
I think it is.
I can't think of his name.
I think his name is like Soren Skarsgård or something.
But he was on Ally McBeal too.
Was he?
Yeah.
Remember that. Who was
he? He was like her crazy coworker dude. He was totally on Ally McBeal.
I'm going to have to go back and watch that again. Because I watched Ally McBeal. Like, I loved that show and pretty much everything.
Every time I see him on something, that's what I remember is that, oh, he's that guy that was the weirdo from Ally McBeal.
Well,
yeah.
The guy who was just on S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, I actually remember seeing him at Disney. He was like trying to act all incognito. I was like, and everyone's going, dude, you're on Ally McBeal.
He was also in Ghostbusters too.
There's a website where we can look this up. It's called imdb.com. I'm going to go there right now. Actually, I have the app on my phone. I probably use that more than like Google search. I use IMDb. So, of course, I'm, you know, kind of a geek, and I like all sorts of movies and TV. And every time I'm watching something, I'm like, where do I know that actor from? Let me look that up.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Just have to remember.
I do too.
But yeah, I don't know why no one from the cast of Thor 2 was on this episode. It was, and especially it made the post-credit scene, the epilogue, so much more disappointing that it's, you know, Coulson having a dream about Tahiti that gives us no new information.
Yeah.
And here's my other complaint. Mm-hmm. Ward, that scene that they kept showing with Ward and the kid in the well and the kid that tells him not to throw the rope down. Which one was his brother?
Well,
was his brother the kid in the well or the one that told him not to save the kid in the well?
Well, to me, I thought I created more confusion.
Yeah. I couldn't follow that. So was he the one with the rope that was told not to throw the rope down?
Yeah, that was Ward. Okay. Because the kid was yelling up to him.
Because he called
at the very
him Ward,
end,
yeah.
He called him Grant, yeah.
Yeah, he called him Grant. So I kind of figured that out. But yeah, at first I thought that the person that was drowned, I thought that was like him as a kid drowning.
Yeah.
But then when they showed him at the top of the well and they were yelling his name, I was like, okay, so that's him. So is that his brother in the well or, and who's this other kid or is the other kid his brother and he let some random dude drown or did the kid even drown? And you know,
they showed him throw the rope down, but they didn't show if the kid got out or not.
Right. Well, you know, after he's been thrashing around down there, he might be too tired to hold on to a rope to be pulled out to safety.
Yeah.
You know, plus,
and how the
you know,
hell, how yeah. the hell did Sky, you know, he's, you know, she asked him, oh, is it about your brother? I don't remember them ever mentioning Ward's brother on that in the first 7 episodes. Not
Maybe.
Once did I hear about this. So, uh-huh. So like, apparently he talked to her about this off camera. And she's bringing it up. It's so important that she knows immediately that he's talking about his brother, but they've never mentioned it on the show before.
Again, we don't know what was talked about in depth during the pilot episode with the whole truth serum.
Yeah, that's
true.
Okay, so back to the Ally McBeal thing. Peter McNichol played John Cage. That was his character name.
The guy I was trying to think of was the guy from the Thor movie, Stellan Skarsgård's character.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Peter McNichol. Okay, never mind.
No, I knew he was on Ally McBeal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, which guy were you talking about?
One of the guys that wasn't on the show, the older guy who was the one that Loki mind controlled in the Avengers. He was the professor that was friends with Natalie Portman's character.
Oh, I'm just going to have to look up. The
actor's name is Stellan Skarsgård, I believe.
I thought you were talking about Alexander Skarsgård, and I'm like, what does he have to do with anything? He's like the guy from S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I totally understand what you're saying. Like, oh, okay, never mind. Yeah, no, he wasn't on the Ally McBeal.
Yeah, I can't think of his character's name in Thor.
Eric Selvig.
Yeah, Selvig. Like, you know, why wasn't at least he on, you know, when they need an expert in Norse mythology, why do they go, you know, to Peter McNichol other than it serves the plot? You know, why don't they go to him or Jane or Kat Dennings even?
Well, I'm Kat Dennings, TV-wise, has contract with CBS.
That would not keep her from doing it.
I was gonna say
spot.
people are on multiple different shows on multiple different networks all the time.
You know, Ty Burrell was on Key and Peele playing a Nazi, so
Of course, you know, if you're on ABC Family, then it's pretty much guaranteed that you're going to be on at least three other shows on ABC Family at some point as a guest star.
There's a very limited pool of actors.
That's a very, you know, it's very much, you know, if they like you on that show, then they'll put you on another. I think it's just the same, you know, group of people that are running everything. So they're like, well, hey, I've worked with him. I know he's awesome. So we'll just get him to do it. And I know he's not working this week because they're, you know, on hiatus until the spring and, you know, because they only – there's this new thing where they film like 10 episodes and then they air 10 episodes of something else. And then they go back to the first show and there's 10 episodes of that. And then there's 10 episodes of the second show, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah, the whole Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing this week, I thought it was, you know, for a procedural episode, it was probably better than any of the other ones. Peter McNichol was really a delight and his character was interesting. But it just – it felt disappointing. The show feels directionless. They need, you know, they need like a big bad, and they have one. It's whoever's behind, you know, the Centipede Project, who I guess people are referring to.
I don't even remember that plot line about the Centipede. I don't even remember that.
There was the gun from Angel was the guy who had the, you know, the extremist sort of thing. It was like the Chitauri tech with the extremists and the super soldier serum. And they came back. There was the other one, the fire guy. It was the same doctor from that first episode.
Right.
But, you know, they haven't said – here's the thing. It's great that, you know, they don't know who's behind it. We need to know as the audience who it is. You know, we should know that it's Hydra probably.
Well, even Rising Tide has taken a backseat.
Yeah. I think
the other thing about it is I feel like watching, even just watching the first episode of the show, like I've seen the Avengers, but I hadn't actually seen, like I haven't seen Iron Man. I haven't seen the new Thor. I saw the first Thor movie, but I haven't seen the new one. So like I just kind of felt like I needed to have seen all of those movies to really understand who these characters are. Like, I'm supposed to know. They make allusions to things as if I'm supposed to know what they are within the comic series. And I just feel like, you know, I haven't read the comic and I haven't watched the right movie to know what exactly is going on. And so for people, you know, one of the points of doing a show like this where it's on a major network is to get people who haven't gone to these movies and who aren't really interested in comics to see this show and be like, whoa, this is interesting. I think I want to go watch these movies now, you know, and then they get interested in these other storylines or, hey, I think I want to go out and buy some comics, you know, and see, you know, what the history is for this. But they haven't really made it in such – they've kind of done it the other way around. They've kind of done it so that if you're already a geek and you already like comics and superheroes and you've seen a movie or two, then you'll know who these characters are and what's going on.
Right.
But for someone like – when I'm watching it, I feel lost on a lot of it and I do know kind of what's going on. So for somebody who's not introduced to that world at all and has no idea and like has never seen Thor or, you know, any of these other things, to have watched that episode and just be like, I don't get any of these in jokes. I don't know what's going on. They're making these weird references to things that like I'm supposed to know what this alien planet is and that they're super powerful and that they live forever. Like, why do I know? Like, I don't know that, you know, so it's not really going to introduce people that aren't already interested in it.
That's where Arrow does take it.
Yes.
Arrow does draw you to that point.
Because if you've never read a comic book, you've never picked anything up, you watch the first episode, all of a sudden, here's this character, here's the situation he's in. No, you don't know everything that happened to him on the island, but they keep showing you little flashbacks so you get more and more insight into his character. And simultaneously, you've got stuff going on and it's contained within this plot so that, yeah, if there's other things, you know, other references and other people that come in, you may not know who they are, like Brother Blood and all that. With that being introduced, you know who he is right now. You don't necessarily know what's going on with him or what his storyline or what his plot is, but when it develops, you've already been introduced to it.
Right.
Yeah. I'll tell you this.
Not going to be like, I've never heard of this guy. They're just bringing in this random character, this random villain for some reason, you know?
Yeah. While it is true, Arrow does change the backstories or the Green Arrow universe slightly, you know, similar to Smallville, it's still enough to get you interested to say, yeah, I really like this show. I could either go get the Arrow comic that supports the show, or I could go read Green Arrow and find out the other history and storyline.
Yeah. Well, I don't recommend that. DC has not been doing a stellar job since their reboot.
But I would recommend, though, if you like the island stuff and you like the relationship Queen has with, can't think of her name. Is it Kato? No.
Kato?
Not Kato. Not like Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
What's her? Is it Keiko? I can't think of her
name. Oh, the girl on the island.
Yes.
On the island.
Get Longbow Hunters.
Longbow Hunters? Really?
I believe, isn't that?
Longbow Hunters.
Isn't she in that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. All that comes to mind with Longbow Hunters is that it's got a level of sort of a graphic violence that Mike Grell is famous for that kind of felt out of place with Green Arrow at the time. Not that it wasn't a good story, which it was.
I was thinking that was
I just can't see it be that related to.
I was thinking that was the story that had her in it, though.
Maybe. I mean, Grell is fantastic.
Oh, I gotta look this up.
But, you know, the Longbow Hunters is, you know, really, it's a really odd choice.
I might have my series mixed up.
What I wanted to say, what you were saying about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. feeling like you needed to have seen the movies. Having seen the movies, you pretty much get everything that you would know from watching the movies in the series.
Oh, so then they really do a terrible job. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
yeah, because I was so excited for the show to come out. And when I watched the first episode, I was like, what the heck is going on? And now it's like, you know.
There are some in-jokes and in-references.
Yeah.
Like when they talk about, like, Extremis in the first episode, that was, you know, the sort of the major plot in Iron Man 3. But pretty much everything you need to know about it that you would have learned from Iron Man 3, they tell you in that episode. It causes people to blow up, basically. Mm. And yeah, it's just the poor job that they're doing. They're trying. See, I think that what they're trying to do is appeal to the widest possible audience, and they're doing that by curtailing the meta plot, essentially.
It
feels like to me is that it's the lack of the meta plot that shows like Buffy had.
Yeah, I DVR probably 4 to 6 shows a night. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is like the last one that I watch. Sometimes I don't even watch it till like Thursday. You know, it's like on a night when I don't have as many other shows to watch, then I'm like, oh yeah, I've got an episode from a couple days ago of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm actually current on it, and I actually saw it this week, so that's good, you know.
Yeah.
And,
so I'm actually kind of like, I'm starting to like the Goldbergs better than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You know, I've only ever seen the first, like, minute and a half of that show because it tapes after, you know, like, at the DVR, like, tapes the very beginning of it, and I watch it, and I just,
It feels like we lived it.
Yeah, but it feels like
a
caricature of exaggeration of, like, a Jewish family in the 80s, and it's just, it's almost offensive to me because I just feel like,
But we saw it. We witnessed it firsthand before it was a TV show. That's the sad part.
Maybe that's why it's not that funny because I'm like, yeah, I've been there. I've seen that. That's what the 80s were like. But yeah. I mean, it's also a caricature and like they kind of over exaggerate things, which is, you know, anything on TV, they're going to do it that way.
Yeah.
It just, to me, it's just not as entertaining as,
Well,
I don't know. You know, I shouldn't comment on it because, like I said, I've only seen the first minute and a half of every episode. But that's not enough to make me feel like, ooh, I'm going to tape the show because I want to see the rest of this episode. Or, ooh, yeah. I'm going to go online and watch the – like, I haven't seen enough in a preview or in the first minute of the show to make me care what happens in the rest of the show. So that kind of makes me think that I wouldn't – because there's been other shows like that where, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't want to watch that show. Oh, I don't want to – but I keep seeing, like, little snippets of it at the beginning of another show, and then I'm like – I think I want to watch this show. I want to – this looks interesting. Like, every time I start to get into the plot, and then I'm like, oh, shoot, it didn't record. So, like, I think that's one of the reasons why I watch so many shows on the CW, because there were shows that I was like, eh, I'm not really going to care about that. But after seeing that little bit, I'm like, wait, who's that? Wait, what's going on? And then I have to just start watching the show.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, I've maybe seen up to 3 or 4 minutes of each first episode, you know, of each episode of – Goldberg's. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so and so. And that's so and so. And that's so and so. I am like, why do I want to watch something I lived? You know, I almost wonder if these writers came out pafty.
The people that were recognizing it aren't the people that we were friends with. They're the annoying people. You know what I mean? I think that's what it is. Because when I'm watching it, I'm just like, you know what? The older brother, he's like the obnoxious kid that everybody like couldn't stand. Yeah. But he was popular. But like at the same time, he was popular and everybody like cared what he thought. But at the same time, he was like such a jerk that nobody nobody really liked him. But everybody was like afraid to not like him because he was popular. You know?
My first thought, you take the glasses off, is Seth.
I haven't seen enough of the show to make that assumption. I have seen Seth's new show though, and I actually watched that. It was entertaining. It was about comics last night. It was actually pretty funny. He has his comic collection and, you know, his dad's like reading them in the bathroom. So he gets all paranoid and he puts them in a storage unit. Well, somebody breaks into the storage unit, steals them, sells them on Craigslist to the other guy's dad. So now the other guy, you know, because the other guy's dad feels bad that he threw away his comics or, you know, he was high and he traded them for a blanket or something. I don't know. But so he buys the comics and he's like, oh, you bought me comics. That was so nice, Dad. And he's going through the collection and Seth is like, oh yeah, I had that one. Oh yeah. He's like, wait, I think this might be my collection. And so then they get in like this huge, you know, thing over whether or not he's like, no, 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 I can't take it if it's yours. No, 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 you take it. And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
Isn't Eugene Levy one of the dads?
No.
No, who are they?
I don't know.
I'm gonna Google
Hang on,
this.
I've got one of them was. Let me check.
Because I watched like
we
the
all
first
rush
episode.
To.
Or
rush
two
to
of that.
Yeah.
Oh, Martin Mull is who I'm thinking of.
Let's see. So there's Peter Reigert, yeah, and Martin Mull.
Yeah, Martin Mull's Giovanni Ribisi's dad. Yes. I watched like the first couple episodes of that and I was like, this, you know, for the people who are in this show should be funnier.
You know, a lot of it just kind of goes straight to the toilet humor. Like I watched the episode goes to the doctor. Yeah, that one was just awful. Like, that whole episode, I was like, this isn't funny. This is, like, disturbing and yuck.
Yeah, I just...
It's like one
I
of the
know,
shows I really wanted to like, and then every time I watch it, I'm just like, oh, man. Like, can I go back and just watch Robot Chicken instead?
Yeah. It just doesn't hit me the way that some of the other shows that I like New Girl or Modern Family...
And I feel bad, Seth. I'm sorry. If you're listening to this, Seth, I'm sorry. I hate to say bad things about your show. It's not for me.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I've been trying to get him on the show. And that's been a challenge on its own.
He's not even really on Facebook. They had to delete somebody created a fake Facebook profile for him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's kind of one of those when you notice that he's not friends with his wife and that, you know, when he added that they were married, like she didn't accept that, you know, that she didn't, confirm that status. That's kind of a tip off that maybe that's not a site by the real Seth Green, because like probably his wife would have accepted his friend request. Like, I'm just thinking probably.
Just maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like all these comments like, oh, I was with so-and-so, and then it's got this picture that's, you know, from the tabloid. So it's very obviously not something he took himself. But on his own Facebook feed, it had posted, how do I get rid of a fake Facebook profile? And then I had a link to it. It's like, oh my. So yeah, I follow him on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm Facebook friends with his wife. So
I even contacted his, PR manager. Try and get him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
He only does the larger shows. Really?
Yeah. Well, he's a busy guy.
Yeah.
True. But to limit, especially, you know, when I dropped, I knew him from when? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Now, if it was Brett trying to get him on a show, I bet he would go on that show.
Oh, I'm
well,
sure.
You know, the PR for person's sure. job is not to get you in touch with the celebrities, it's to keep you away from them in most cases.
Right. Yeah.
So, I guess moving on. A new show debuted this weekend, Almost Human.
I didn't watch it, but I've not heard good things so far.
I watched it. I saw it. I can tell you a little bit about it. I liked it. I don't know as far as where it's going. It kind of doesn't quite, well, there's a little bit of an overarching plot to kind of say, oh, well, here's this big bad thing that's going on and we have to figure this out. And within that, I mean, the first episode basically introduced the characters, introduced the technology, introduced the world so that you can kind of see what's going on. And kind of the premise behind it is that now it's a police drama. So if you don't like police dramas, you're not going to like this show. Like if you hate CSI and Criminal Minds and all those things where they're trying to solve a murder or solve a crime, then you're just going to hate this show because it's a crime drama.
It's a procedural then.
Right. Yeah. It's a procedural. Yeah. But, in this world, we're about 35 years in the future. Technology has taken off at an alarming rate. And so now every human cop is paired, like their partner has to be an android. And so there's this MX series that's a very logical robot. And those are the people, those are the ones that are paired up with everybody. And they don't take into account things like, you know, hey, I'm going to save my friend. He's like, there's a 95% probability that you'll both die if you try to save him. So I'm leaving you. You know, that kind of a thing. And so the main character, of course, hates robots. Well, hates androids. I'm sorry. I don't mean to call them the wrong name.
Don't want to use the R word.
I know, right? I'm trying to think what the word was. They, a synthetic. They call them synthetics. I'm not fond of that term. Well, anyway.
How about toaster?
So the point is, you know, so he gets paired up. He basically gets furious that he's paired up with this guy and like kicks him out of the car door, out of a moving car so that he's like destroyed under the traffic. And then he says, oh, oops, sorry. He fell out of the car. And of course nobody suspects anything. And with all this technology, there's no like video surveillance inside the car that noticed that he was the one that pushed him out of the car. But whatever, I'll go ahead and suspend belief and go on with the story. So then he gets paired up with this other older model where they tried to make them empathetic. So this is an android that actually has human emotions.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the idea, is that here you have this one android who has these human emotions and he's totally different than all the other ones. And because of that, they get along better, and, you know, things that you kind of just come to expect when you're dealing with a logical, you know, you would basically treat the android like you're treating a computer, as in, okay, research this, look this up for me, you know, scan such and such, blah, 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 you know, synthetic off, if you want them to be, instead of saying, please be quiet, please stop talking, you know, it's like,
yeah.
Voice off, you know, and it's like, you know, I'm a person, you could talk to me. And so it's just kind of funny to have this like android that has feelings. So that was the first episode, was just kind of introducing this world and these characters.
Which one's Rudy?
Rudy?
Rudy Lom.
I don't know. Let me look that up because I don't. What else is he?
It's Mackenzie. It's Mackenzie Crook. Is the actor from The Office?
Hold on. Let me find. I've lost my window now. I'm sorry. You'll have to like edit this out while I'm like searching.
I'm just looking because I heard Mackenzie Crook was in it, so I looked up which character he played, and I'm not sure if he's like a major character or.
Almost Human. Mackenzie Crook, Rudy Lom.
Yeah.
Oh, he plays the, he plays the kind of mad scientist guy who fixes the androids.
Okay.
Yeah, he's actually really cool. I like his character. And then, Michael Ealy plays the robot that has feelings. Okay. And so it's kind of this, you know, interesting alternate universe in the future, and it is a crime drama. But of course then for the second episode, immediately they take it to right where we knew they would, sex bots. And so now there's all these, you know, prostitute androids running around, and they have been programmed to feel, you know, so they're kind of, they use the same chip as, you know, the feely cop. And so, I'm just kind of like, really? That was like the best you could come up with for the second, for, you know, you're in this futuristic world. Let's go straight to porn. Well, you know what? That's life. We get the internet. That's the first thing that everybody is. We're like, oh, internet porn, you know? So.
Yeah.
Why does it seem like every topic that we talk about, I would just wind up talking about porn. What's going on here?
That's by design.
This is not the first time in the cast that, you know, the topic, you know, just turned around and now I'm talking about porn again.
Hey, it's Porn the Gathering.
Right. Yeah.
it gives a whole new meaning to the word tap.
Uh-huh. No, there are sleeves that say, I'd tap that. There are t-shirts that say, I'd tap that with the little tap symbol. Or I'd little tap symbol that, you know.
When I was in college, one of my friends used to make pornographic proxies of magic cards. Of all the ones you'd expect. Gush, probe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be careful with that if you go to a tournament.
It was not something that he took to the tournaments.
It's not something that is specific. I mean, unless it was some sort of a, like, racial slur or something, like, that was a specific, specifically attacking a particular person or group of people. For that, you might wind up with a penalty. But for the most part, if you show up with sleeves that are a little too racy or, you know, art, you know, on your tokens that's a little too racy, normally you're just asked, put that away. You know, there's little kids in the room. Come on, you know, and somebody made the analogy, if you wouldn't take it into a middle school, if it wouldn't be appropriate for you to take it into a middle school, don't bring it to a tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, he did not take these to tournaments, but they were also not a little racy. He found hardcore pornography to match up with the cards.
Yeah. And if you're playing around the kitchen table with your other adult friends who all enjoy that type of humor, you know, do what you want. It's your house. But, you know, when you're going out in public to a place where children are present, you know, show some restraint.
It was something that was really funny when we were 20 and smoking pot.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. In Colorado, right? Where it's, well, it wasn't legal then anyway, so never mind.
Yeah. No, this was in Indiana, Pennsylvania.
You know, a lot of kids from my school went to college there. That was a huge, so many people went to IUP.
Yeah, that's where I went. I worked at the comic book store there.
Huh. You probably know some people that I went to high school. Well, maybe not, because they would have graduated like the year before you went, but yeah.
So, I think that's going to bring the show to a close. Where can we find you on the internet, Adina?
I am on Twitter. My handle everywhere is Punk Rock Shred Girl, and girl is spelled G-R-R-L. So I'm on Twitter, @PRSGirl. I'm on you know, any kind of forum or anything that you're searching. Tumblr, my Tumblr is PRS Girl. Facebook, facebook.com/PRS Girl. You can find me also PRS Girl at Gmail if you're looking to send me an email about something in particular. And, my blog, PRSGirl.com. So basically if you search for PRS Girl, PRSGRRL, anywhere on the internet, it's pretty much going to be me. And if you're online, if you're on Magic Online, that's my online handle, so you can find me there too. We didn't talk about it in this cast because it's not really a geeky thing, but I actually live in Wyoming because I learned how to snowboard and I moved here to be closer to deeper snow and steeper slopes. And so that's where the punk rock Shred Girl actually comes from.
Makes sense.
But I'm also a Rakdos player, so, you know, when Shred Free came out, I was really, really, I just wanted to get one altered to say Punk Rock Shred Freak and, you know, have that be my, you know, character that I play.
Very cool.
But,
you can find me on Twitter at NecroFamicom.
Very cool. You can find me, at WeebieGeeks on Twitter, on Facebook at fb.me/WeebieGeeksPC. Email weebiegeekspc@gmail.com, or feel free, questions, comments, show ideas, whatever. Give us a call at 321-219-8227. I would like to thank Adina for coming on to the show.
You're welcome.
And joining us for the show. And until next time.
Give the evacuation code signal.
I will bring you back a snowball.
All right, cut the chatter.
This ship will self-destruct in 20 seconds. This is your last chance to push the cancellation button.
It's over, Prime.
Adventure. Excitement.
Why, oh, why didn't I take the blue pill?
I wouldn't trust this overgrown pile of microchips any further than I could throw it.
Hold it. Hold it. I said hold it.
By the way, why are we wearing bras on our heads?
Ceremonial.
Clark, I don't like the look of this neighborhood.
Come on, Ellen. It's important for the kids to witness the plight of the rebellion. Kids, you noticing all this plight? Roll them up.
We be geeks, your voice of the geek revolution.
This has been a We Be Geeks production.
Your attention, please.
Sorcerer Radio is a fan-run, award-winning internet radio station that has been entertaining Disney fans for over a decade.
We have dedicated this happy place to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America.
With many weeks' worth of Disney park music, attraction audio, live shows every weekday, as well as our podcasts, you'll easily be transported to your favorite vacation destination anytime while at home, work, or on the go.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
Download our free apps for iOS, Android devices. Plan and book your next trip to the Disney parks. Interact with the Disney fan community and get the latest news stories at srsounds.com.
Broadcasting the magic every day.
Who are you, if I might ask?
Sorcerer Radio, srsounds.com.
Dude, what are you doing?
Getting ready for Soda Pop Talk.
We don't actually talk about soda.
Well, don't waste it. Break out the rum.
It's Soda Pop Talk! Exactly. I don't want them to think I'm ignoring them, so I'm going to answer them. But then it turns around, and I'm like, why aren't they answering me?
Well, see, that just makes me think of, you know, cunnilingus. Let's break right into that right there.
It's a militant teddy bear, you
Dr. Horrible. And that's the only thing that I like by Joss Whedon.
The only thing?
The only thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you're definitely not going to hell for that one.
Maybe?
Oh, too bad it wasn't like with the song, Hell Yeah.
I even washed my hands after I pee because I have cocked hands after that. I'm going to wash the hand off.
Remember, if it's not rotting something, it's not soda pop talk.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Check out the pop culture podcast that everyone is talking about. Follow the show on Twitter at Well Watchers. Listen to the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and thewellwatchers.com.